Hi, this is Dennis Hoyle from Bellwether Games, and you're listening to The Family Gamers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 74 of The Family Gamers Podcast.
I am your host, Andrew, and as always, I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we are here to bring you another exciting episode of the show. I think this might be one of my... I've actually been looking forward to this episode even before we knew what a lot of the content for this episode was going to look like. Or sound like, I suppose. but I would be remiss if I did not ask you if you know anything really brilliant about the number 74.
No.
Okay, well, so sorry. But we are here. It is the week after PAX Unplugged. Actually, technically, 1 week ago, we were still at PAX Unplugged.
We were.
And man, we had a really, really good time. I think we did more than we expected in some ways, and we learned a lot in other ways. It was our kids' first big con.
Yes.
So I know we did a show about cons. A few weeks ago, and we mostly took our advice, and we also learned some things as well.
Yeah. We took our own advice to revisit with the kids and figure out what was working and what wasn't.
And I got to be honest with you.
It made a huge difference.
That might have been the best thing that we did with regards to our kids at the con is...
And snacks.
Is having, having kind of that Friday post-mortem.
Yes.
And figuring out what worked and what didn't, and then... I mean, they were great on Friday anyway, really.
They were really well behaved, but they were so done. And they were like, do we have to go back tomorrow? And we're like, yes.
Yes. But we, you know, we did sit down, have a chat, and be like, what did you like? What didn't you like? What would you like to do more of?
Yeah.
And then we kind of attacked Saturday, but differently, and it went really, really well.
Yeah.
As always on the show, we kind of dove right into it, but we talk about what we've been doing. Obviously, PAX Unplugged was a huge part of what we've been doing.
But we played games before we went to PAX.
We did.
And we played games after we came back from PAX.
We did.
So we can talk about those.
Yeah. We even put a couple of videos up.
Yep.
On the Facebook, I definitely recommend facebook.com/filmgamersaa. I highlighted some of the games that we picked up at PAX Unplugged that I'm really excited to play this holiday season, some of which we've already played.
Yes.
And you can see the stack of games that were generously provided to us for review by publishers. And if there's anything in that stack, by the way, if you watch that video, let us know and we'll definitely let you know how it goes.
We're planning to get to it all eventually. But if there's anything you see there and you're like, oh, I really want to know how that game is, we'll try to kind of push it up the queue a little bit.
Right. And some people commented on the video and said, hey, I'm really interested in how Viral is, which... It's awesome. And stuff like that. So definitely those are things that we want to hear because we want to be able to provide meaningful information. The other video that we included.
We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes.
You want to talk about that in a couple of minutes? Okay. So, my dearest, what have we been playing?
Well, before we even went to PAX, we wanted to get a few more games in before that. So we played Biblios.
So there's two reasons why I pulled out Biblios.
One was because we were going to meet the designer.
Yeah. So one of them was we were meeting Steve Finn, who is Dr. Finn, who is the designer of the game Biblios. And also because we knew that Claire was going to get that chance to interview Allison Hayslip from ELO, who is the publisher of Biblios. And so it was kind of a nice two for one a kind of opportunity there. So,
and it was fun.
It was you know, I think I expected it to be like weirdly deeper than it was, and it's not that it was a shallow game, but it was like, okay, there's not as much here as I expected. It kind of had this heavy ambiance, but it was a nice,
it was a light game,
light game with some nice strategy in it. Yeah, I liked it. It actually, this is going to sound strange, and it might just be because it's dice, but it reminded me a little bit of Sagrada. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I had some hang up about it. But Sagrada was stained glass windows, and I think Cathedral's one. I think stained glass windows.
Yeah, yeah.
And Biblios was you're in a monastery.
You're a monk in a monastery.
Put those
trying
together,
to
and there was some
text,
so. Dice manipulation.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't rolling dice, but you use dice as kind of point counters along the way, and you.
And maybe also we played them close together-ish. I don't know. I just for some reason, I made a mental connection in my head.
I can see that.
I think, actually, they would be kind of fun games to play in the same night if you did, like, a themed game night.
Oh, yeah.
That would be, because they kind of they have enough loose, like, in the org chart, they would be dotted lines, right?
Sure, yeah. They got enough similarity in theme.
Right.
Yeah. We also played Seikatsu, which was fun. We played a lot of Seikatsu over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, IDW sent us a copy of Seikatsu for review, which is awesome of IDW. And
so we're trying to play it, so we can review it.
Playing the crap out of it. And it's beautiful, and it's fun, and it's super easy to understand.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump ahead slightly to Thanksgiving. But we played Seikatsu again at Thanksgiving. My mom, who enjoys board games greatly, but doesn't pick up on them quickly, and she complains regularly, like, I don't want to play something once and then not play it again, because I won't remember how to do it. She picked up Seikatsu on the first try, and then we immediately played it again anyway.
Right.
But she definitely got the strategy right away. It is beautifully simple.
Elegant.
Yes.
Right. I agree.
We've never talked about what Seikatsu is, but...
I have no idea what Seikatsu is. Do you know?
Yes.
Tell me now.
No. I mean, like, what the gameplay is.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant that there was some meaning behind the word like that.
Should I look it up?
Do you want to talk about Seikatsu now?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
You mentioned it. Let's dive right in. In Seikatsu, we've played it 2 or 3 players. You are creating a beautiful flower garden. It's one of those Zen Japanese kind of themes. And each player has, at any time, has 2 little tiles in their hand. They're round tokens, nice and heavyweight. It's really pleasant to hold. And your token has flowers and a bird. As you're placing tokens down onto this hexagonal garden, connected birds get you points right away. It's slightly more complicated than that, but not much.
Well, it stacks in the same way that... never mind.
Birds immediately touching birds of the same kind get points. And then at the end of the game, when you've filled up the board, then each person looking in the direction from their pagoda counts out the same kind of flowers in each row. You want to get the most of any one kind of flower in a row. Because 1 flower is 1 point, but 2 is 3 points, and 3 is 6 points. And if by some miracle you get 6 of the same flower, you're basically going to win the game, because it's like it's like 30 points or something like that. So all along the way, you're trying to decide, do I want points now? Do I want points later? Does it make sense to block off this other person's row? Because it's a hexagonal board. Each of the 3 players is looking at rows in a different way.
I think that might be kind of the most interesting part of the game to me.
It's the most unusual part of the game, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it stretches your brain a little bit to be like, well, if I put this here, then I'm going to have 3 pinks in a row. But, oh, this other guy, if I put it there, they're going to have 4 pink flowers in a row. Maybe I can find a different place to put this that's still in my row, but not in his.
Right. So you get all the birds during play. You tally up the rows relative to your pagoda at the end, and then whoever wins.
Whoever has the most points wins. I mean, it's very simple.
While you were talking, let's see. Seikatsu is, in Japanese social science, the conscious and non-submissive activity of ordinary people in shaping their lives.
Which
kind of makes sense.
Ordinary shaping of the things around you. All right.
There's a lot of really neat kind of terms in Japanese that represent whole ideas.
Yeah.
Do we have stuff like that in English? I mean, we must. It's just I have no perspective.
We do, but yeah, you're not really aware of it because you would need to step outside of our culture and see other people be like, what does that mean?
Oh, what a heady conversation. Okay.
All right.
Speaking of things that are a lot less heady, I got a chance to sit down with our 6-year-old and play Stop Thief, just the 2 of us.
And he enjoyed it so much.
Well, and then I got in trouble because I let him stay up late to play.
Yeah.
Somebody was displeased with me.
I was a little bit displeased. He had school in the morning.
Whatever. Anyway.
But he really enjoyed it to the point that he sought it out a couple of times when we were at PAX Unplugged and was very sad that he did not get a chance to play it at PAX Unplugged.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer.
It's really hard. He was doing...
I mean, it's more of a bummer that he was upset that he didn't get a chance to play, not that he didn't get a chance to
play. Right.
So, yeah. So then after PAX, we played a bunch of games as well. I think, you know, since PAX is the subject du jour, we'll save that for after the break. But so let's see. So, yeah. So, want to talk about Codenames Disney now?
Almost.
Okay. Oh, man, I'm so excited.
I have to do my little awe moment that as soon as we picked up the three-year-old from the babysitter and brought him home, he's like, Mommy, play games with me?
Yeah, I mean...
Of course, honey. Yes. And so we picked out which I still love and still has an awful name. So
wrapped around his finger.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And later in the day, he did the same thing to the nine-year-old. Mm-hmm. Said, play games with me? And so they played Go Away Monster.
Wrapped around his finger.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. All right, now we can get to Codenames Disney.
Okay, so we had Thanksgiving dinner. It was all yum, Thanksgiving dinner, blah, blah, blah. And I think before pie?
Yes.
Okay, so before pie, we more or less forced our kids to sit down and play Codenames Disney. And it's not that they didn't want to play Codenames Disney. It's more that they wanted to hang out with my sister and her boyfriend and play Super Smash Brothers.
And so you grab the sister and boyfriend, and you're like, hey guys, why don't you play Codenames Disney against the kids?
Right. So we set them up with a game of Codenames Disney, which, if you don't know, is a lot like Codenames, unsurprisingly, yes. Except... the cards, instead of having different words on both sides and you can just reuse the cards, whatever, the cards have pictures on one side and words on the other side.
Yeah, and you can lay them out however you want. You can do just pictures, just words, or you can do a mix,
right.
Which is
pretty
cool.
Totally, it doesn't matter. So the other thing is that there's kind of the normal 5x5 grid with an assassin card.
They don't call it assassin, they just call it failure.
Whatever.
But yes.
With an assassin card. Or if you want to play kind of easier, you can do a 4x4 grid that does not include that card.
Yeah. Well, they specifically call it Codenames Disney Family Edition.
Right.
It's a family game. So.
Okay.
Easier to play.
So we set the kids up with the game and, we decided to video record this one.
Mm-hmm.
So our 6-year-old and our 9-year-old were playing against my sister and her boyfriend. Spoiler alert. We told them to throw the game, which they did, as directed.
You can tell in the video.
Yeah, you kind of can. But then as a prize for winning a game of Codenames Disney, we announced to our children, and I think we've even talked about it on the show before anyway, so it's not a surprise, that we were going to Disney World like 9 days later.
They didn't believe us.
Yeah, you should definitely go to facebook.com/familygamersAA and check out the video. It's like 10 minutes long. You can probably skip to halfway through if you want to kind of see what the reaction, you know, thing was. But I think we've played too many mental games on our kids that they didn't want to believe us.
A little bit, yeah.
So that was that part was, I guess, a little bit of a bummer. But over the course of the day, as they kept asking questions and it started to sink in that this was a thing that was actually happening, they've been getting progressively more and more excited. I still think they're a little bit in disbelief.
They're just trying to wrap their heads around the fact that we're going to go to Disney and now they only have a week to prepare themselves, which I think is going to be about the right amount of time.
In a week, we'll be in Florida.
Yay!
Yeah, that's crazy talk. But we will have a scheduled show. Do not worry. We will not shirk our responsibility. December 4th show will be a lot of the interviews.
We have interviews
from PAX Unplugged. Yeah. Tons of them. It's actually going to be a super long show because we have a ton of interviews. So we're super excited about Disney. We'll have a show for you. It'll be good stuff. But we played a bunch of games that we got from PAX.
Well, Codenames Disney was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've played Blank a few times now. I would rather talk about that one in our PAX stuff.
Yep. We played the new expansion to Gruff called Rage of the Trolls. So Gruff, I've talked about a little bit on the show. Rage of the Trolls is their latest expansion, which is actually a standalone expansion. It's got some new shepherds, and it also has a single a single player mode where you are attacking a troll. You can also play it co-op.
Oh, cool.
So I'm looking forward to that with the 9-year old. So that'll be a lot of fun. And we played Crosstalk, which
is a party clue giving guessing
right.
game.
What did you think of Crosstalk?
I enjoyed it. I'm not sure I really want to play it with the kids again, but I'm willing to give it another shot.
Yeah,
better
I think
as an adult party game.
It is better as an adult party game. I don't think our kids were bad guessers. I think our kids were bad clue givers. And
yes.
So
yes.
With Crosstalk, I would definitely say, and especially our six-year-old, it's better if adults are giving clues. Yeah. But beyond that, I don't think there's a problem with playing with kids.
Fair enough.
Down to that age range. I mean, it's rated 10 plus anyway, which is, I think, appropriate.
Yeah.
But that game was a lot of fun. We also played some video games. We picked up Forza Horizon 3 on Black Friday, and we played that a little bit. And some Super Mario Odyssey. We finally took that out, because now that the kids know about Disney, I can show it to them.
Because we're going to be bringing the Switch on the plane with Super Mario Odyssey and Zelda and really every Switch game that we have.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's going to be awful because Elliot's going to be watching an iPad. The kids are going to be playing their DSs. One of us is going to be using the Switch. I don't know what the other one of us is going to be doing. Probably writing reviews. It'll be good. Anyway.
Keeping the kids under
control. So that's basically the stuff that we've been playing around PAX, but not necessarily at PAX.
Yeah.
Do you want to cut to a break right now and then we'll come back? Because we have a lot of PAX content to talk about.
So much content. Let's do a quick break now and then we'll come back and we'll start talking about Friday at PAX. And we're back!
Let's talk about PAX. So we drove down Thursday night. And then we were there bright and early Friday morning for the PAX press hour, and we were able to catch up with somebody who we tried to schedule with and couldn't, which was Steve Jackson Games.
Steve Jackson Games. We have mentioned recently that we love Illuminati as a game for adults.
Mm-hmm.
I found out there's going to be a new version of Illuminati.
And we're probably going to buy it.
It's in basically like beta testing right now.
Okay.
So.
Oh, so they're changing stuff.
Yeah.
It's not just a reprint.
Yeah, no, because there's stuff that's horribly out of date.
Eh.
Well, the version we have is already one behind because there was one called like Illuminati 2000 or something.
Sure.
Like that.
Sure. So, okay.
Yeah.
Then we're definitely buying it.
Yes. But we also got to see some of their other lightweight games.
Mm-hmm.
There was a speed matching game called Super Kitty Bug Slap.
Which Claire really liked.
Oh my goodness, she dominated in this game.
Oh, that explains why she liked it. Okay, got it.
Part of it. She is really good at speed games like that. She also proved that later on in the day when she walked up to our friend Andy Jeremiah, who was showing Brew Dice to people. And she's like, can I play? And he's like, sure, take over. And she dominated there too.
Is it sad that there's a game developer who knows us well enough to say, yeah, you can run the game. Have fun.
There were a couple of places we went where we joked about like, I think they call it indentured servanthood, so you can't actually make my kids come work for you, but they'd probably be willing to.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. We also played another game at Steve Jackson Games that was Simon's Cat. So for anyone who has seen the Simon's Cat series on YouTube, it is based on that. It's a suit matching game, like Crazy Eights or Uno, something like that. But it's only got a 36-card deck. You deal out all the cards at the beginning of a round. And the numbers are not evenly distributed amongst the suits.
Okay.
So I think I have a recording that talks about it, but that there are some suits that are like 8 to 10 or 8 to 12, and there are other suits that are lower numbers like 2 to 8, 2 to 9. There's one suit that is 1 and 2. So you go around, you play it Uno style, and if you can't play from the cards in your hand, you take the entire discard pile, it sits in front of you representing a mess that your cat made. At the end of a round, the person with the most messes loses.
Okay, so it's actually player elimination?
you get a token thing, and the idea is that you play several rounds.
Okay.
But yeah. So rather than determining a winner each round, you're determining a loser each round.
Sure.
It was easy to learn. It's got a lot of strategy in it, because once you understand a little bit about the distribution of the numbers, you can force people to start taking messes when they don't want to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that was when you guys were playing that, I went over to Nevu Games and talked to them about Crosstalk and got all whipped up into a frenzy about that. So I think we talked about it a little bit. It's a game that is very kind of taboo-like, except there's no words that you can't say. So the clue giver is giving one private clue to their team, but then the two clue givers, so there's one for each team, is alternating between public clues that they provide for both teams. And when Team A's clue giver puts a public clue out, Team B gets the first guess. And so it's an interesting dynamic where you're trying to really figure out how you want to give clues that make sense with the private clue, but might not make sense to the other team. And it's a really kind of interesting strategic dance. There's also a hint board that the clue giver can pass to their team one time during a round that has, you can use different symbols like ignore, contain, etc. And you can reference the guesses and the clues for each team on it. So you can cross out a bunch of stuff and point things to each other. And
pay attention to this. It's connected to this.
Exactly. So if the black team, if I'm the blue team and the black team has given three clues and two of them make sense in the kind of the path that I'm trying to lead my team down and one of them doesn't, I could say these are good. Just ignore this one and try to go back and forth that way. So we had a lot of fun with it when we played it. I do want to play it more. I think that the more diverse the audience, the better. Yeah. Although I think we did struggle a little bit because our six-year-old was just a bit too young for that. Yeah. And I think the day was starting to get a little bit long as well. We also talked about The Reckoners, which is the upcoming Brandon Sanderson-themed game that Nevu is going to be putting on Kickstarter early next year, which... we'll get more information about. It's they're very, very high on it, but they don't have a whole lot to give out right now for info. So
fair enough.
That was what I did.
All right. And then I went with the kids over to IDW. We went in part because they gave us Saikatsu to review,
And they had the designer of Saikatsu there.
Isaac Shalev. So or Shalev, I'm not sure. Sorry. It was great to talk to him and a little bit of his, you know, how he designed the game. Was cool. They were making a big push on their new Atari series. Mm-hmm. So they just came out with Atari Centipede. Missile Command is coming out in January. Asteroids is coming out in March. And they just started teasing at PAX that Joust is going to have a board game.
I don't even know how any of these, I got to be honest with you, are going to look, are going to play or whatever. I'm super excited to check them out. I'm a little bit bummed that, I'm not bummed for IDW's sake that their booth was completely jam-packed all weekend, but I was a little bit bummed personally that I didn't get a chance to get in there and take a look at that stuff. But I think that's really cool. I'm really interested in what these games are going to look
like.
It's
a really intriguing.
I mean, they've got a fantastic kind of retro-looking art style to it, which makes sense for the games. And that's something I'm a real sucker for, so...
The art style is less... you know, pixelated video game and more 80s sci-fi and fantasy. But I think it's cool.
All right. Works for me. Cool. What do we do after all that?
Right. You went to Studio Woe, and I brought the kids over to look at some simple dexterity games from Mayday.
Okay. So we already talked a little bit about Rage of the Trolls, which we do have a review copy for. I'm really excited to play that game more. Gruff... in general is a neat game with some dynamics that I think if you're not familiar with Gruff are a little bit awkward, but I think they make a lot of sense, and I'm really interested to see how this AI troll thing plays out.
Gruff is definitely on the heavier end of games that we play.
It's not heavy. It's just,
not a heavy game, but
if you get Magic the Gathering, you'll get, it's that kind of two-player, head-to-head kind of thing. The other thing that I saw when I was at Studio Woe is a game that they're going to be putting on Kickstarter in 2018 called Pirate Tanks of Skull Rock. And this is a dexterity game where basically you have two ships, you're pirates, and your pirates are very selfish, and that's relevant.
Sure.
And so it's a dexterity game. You're flicking these like pirate token things around this Skull Rock looking mm-hmm. board. It was all prototype, so it's not final art or anything like that. So I don't have pictures. And so you're kind of trying, there's a bunch of different win conditions that you can try to do, and you can knock other ships off the board and they topple over. There's some little discs that represent treasure chests that if you knock into them, you get those. You have the ability to spend your coins that you gather as treasure to upgrade your ships to do slightly different little things, like you can flick twice or you can, you know, do this or that or the other thing. And then it's just this little dexterity thing where you're trying to move your ships to the right location and stuff like that. Hmm. The thing I like about this game is with a lot of dexterity games, I at least feel like you're basically just kind of flicking as hard as you can to see what happens.
Sure.
You know, yes, you're aiming and stuff like that, but you're pretty much just like, you're full on. This is not that. You have to be gentle.
Yeah.
You have to be accurate. It's a really neat idea, really neat concept. It was tough in their crammed little booth to get a really nice sense of how things were going to work, because you can't move around the board.
Move around the table.
And stuff like that. But really, really cool. Neat way to kind of have to rein yourself in when you're playing a dexterity game to be as accurate as possible. So that is Pirate Tanks of Skull Rock from Studio Woe. Kickstarter next year.
While you were looking at that, we went to Mayday. They had some really cute dexterity games for kids. One was called Coconuts.
Yeah, there is zero chance that game is coming into our house.
No, Coconuts, it was a lot of fun, but I would not want it at home because you have these big monkeys with spring-loaded arms, and you are loading them with these tiny little coconuts that are about the size of a Whopper.
Yeah, they look exactly like Whoppers.
Almost exactly.
Or like chocolate-covered peanuts or something. Yeah.
And then you pull the monkey's arm back, let it go. You're trying to get it into this series of, like, a 3x3 grid of cups that everybody's aiming at.
You think like the carnival game where you're throwing the ping pong balls into the cups. It's almost exactly
but
like that.
Once you get something in a cup, you take that cup and you end up building up a pyramid of cups in front of you.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody else knocks a coconut into one of your cups, they get to take it out of your pyramid. Oh no, if your pyramid falls, that's too bad for you.
Huh.
So it was neat. It was fun. It was super fast paced. It's kind of a modern Hungry Hungry Hippos with a little bit more strategy to it.
Okay, sure.
But mostly you're just flinging coconuts.
So it's not, there's no turn based whatever in this game at all. Yeah, I mean, my biggest concern with that, honestly.
I take it back. They explained it to say that it's turn based, but when we were demoing it, it was just. It was real-time chaos.
It was chaos.
Yeah.
Like, we have a three-year-old. He's going to be like, oh, that's a chocolate-covered peanut on the floor. Arr.
Yes.
Or our stupid cats would do the same thing.
Oh, my goodness, our cats.
So,
yes.
So, I mean, that's my concern with that game, is just that kind of like, it's just a mess waiting to happen.
It is. I will say, it is an upgrade from something like Hungry Hungry Hippos in that it is quiet.
Okay. I couldn't tell because we were on the show floor.
Well, the little coconut things are a hard rubber.
Yeah, all the more reason to think they're chocolate covered peanuts.
And the cups themselves are also not a hard plastic. They're just a little bit. They're like the silicone that you
make
baking cups and stuff out of. So, we also tried Click Clack Lumberjack, mm-hmm. which was sort of like a reverse. Jenga?
Wait.
You have this big tree, and you're trying to hit it with an axe to get the bark to fall off the tree, but keep the tree standing.
Yeah, so there's these stacked, I think it's five pieces for each thing, and so there's a core piece and then four bark pieces or something like that on the outside. Yeah. And so you've got to kind of knock them a little bit so the core piece will move, the whole thing will move over, so the bark piece will fall out the bottom without knocking the whole stack over.
Right. And, of course, it's much easier to do that at the top of the stack and much harder to do that at the bottom of the stack.
Right. But eventually, you've got to get the bark somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was kind of kind of interesting. I think Ash really seemed to like that. He seemed into that.
It was a fun... It acted like a palate cleanser for our kids who, you know, went into some heavy games before and after.
Right. Speaking of after, I think after that we went over to Skybound.
We finally got to play the Grim Forest!
That game, like...
It was a shortened version, but it was still...
It was just nice.
I enjoyed it so much.
The mechanics are so smooth. It's just like, it was like... And the art is so good. I mean, it was just this, like, silky, smooth gameplay experience that was just pleasurable.
Yeah, I mean...
Sound crazy?
A little bit, but that's okay. Everything just kind of flowed well together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everything, all the art was beautiful, and our 9-year-old daughter has suddenly decided that she wants to get into painting minis, so she studied the giant... the giant painted minis that they had on display.
The mega minis or whatever James was calling them. And then we got to meet James.
Yeah.
We met James Hudson. We took some pictures. He's a super nice guy. We didn't get a chance to play the other games that he had in his bag with the secret white boxes. I was super bummed about that.
We didn't have time for that.
But that was awesome. That was kind of the highlight from a gameplay experience of Friday, or at least up until that point, that was the best part of my Friday for sure.
It's definitely the highlight for the grown-ups. I could tell you what the highlight was of Friday for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That was Sumer.
Okay. And that's where you guys went after that? Yeah. Or no, you were there while I was waiting at Skybound or something
it's
like that.
In that same general time period.
Yep.
Sumer is a digital board game. So it was one of the only computer games that was there.
Right.
People were like, why is this here? They're like, well, because it's a board game. It's just a board game that you play on a screen.
Right.
It's played in real time, although there's a little break at the end of each day, shall we say. And it's a, you know, worker placement, collect stuff, bring it back home, you know, upgrade your items, and then it's all with a, like ancient Babylonian theme. So you're
right.
Offering,
so you're trying to please the gods or something.
You're offering
like that?
Up your what all the stuff you've made to the goddess.
Mm-hmm. Does that game have an AI? Can you play it single player, or does it need to be a multiplayer game?
You can play it with an AI.
Okay, excellent. That's really
so
good news.
Up to four players, you know, 1 to 4 players, either locally, or you can play against AI.
Right. So this is a game that had very strong medium Euro elements to it.
Yes.
But because it was a video game, it was a lot more approachable. And that's why the kids liked it so much. Plus, they could sit down there.
On very comfy beanbags.
Right. And so that's kind of an important... That's actually why it was at PAX Unplugged, because it was a very board gamey video game.
Yes.
We have a copy for on Steam.
Yes.
They provided a Steam code. And the thing I'm supremely excited for is that it's coming to Switch, because this is the kind of game
on Switch. Yeah.
That I think would really work on a mobile device like an iPad or a Switch.
Yes.
It doesn't feel to me like the kind of game that a lot of people would sit down in front of a television and play. I think it's just that board game kind of context. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe
as a multiplayer game, a bunch of people would sit down in front of a TV and play it, but as a single player experience,
sure.
It doesn't really seem like that.
It doesn't seem like the kind of game that a bunch of people would sit down in front of a computer and play via Steam, unfortunately.
Unless you can play across, like,
I don't
not know. On the same screen for sure, but
I don't know.
But if you can play across,
probably
Steam
not.
Networking,
probably not, because it does stuff in real time, which would be tough.
That doesn't matter. Lots of video games do stuff in real time.
Fair enough. But it was cool. I am really looking forward to seeing more from the guys who put together this game.
Yeah. That was Studio Wampus, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So definitely check those guys out and see what they're doing with that game. That'll be cool when it comes to Switch.
Yeah.
Super, definitely. Super stoked for that. Then we went to Devir Americas. So they are a company who has been around for a while, almost 30, I think 25 years, maybe they were telling me. But they've done a lot of international publications. So they had like the Spanish and Portuguese license for Catan, for example.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And so they've done a lot of work in Brazil and Latin America with their stuff. And the gentleman that we were working with, Matt Highland, he's kind of the U.S. sales guy. So he was able to show us a whole bunch of stuff. So they've been around for a long time, but I think they started coming into and publishing things in the States last year.
Yeah. So here they're a newcomer.
They showed us a lot of stuff. They showed us a game called Checkpoint Charlie.
That was an interesting deduction game where a little bit Guess Who-like or Clue-like.
It was actually a lot Outfoxed-like.
Sure.
Only not cooperative.
Right. Well, so everybody has one clue to the identity of the spy that you're all trying to catch.
Right.
And so you know what your one clue is, and you're trying to figure out what all the other players around the table, you know, what theirs are, so you can deduce who the spy actually is before anybody else does.
Right. So everybody, the story of the game is you're all dogs and you're trying to catch a cat.
Yes,
right?
A cat spy.
And so the cat either has a trench coat or a sweater on, either is or is not wearing glasses, either is or is not wearing a hat, is either gray or orange, and either is or is not holding a newspaper.
Yes.
So they're all binary.
Yes.
Options. And so everybody has one of these things that they know is true about the suspect.
About the suspect.
And so you go around in circles and you draw a card, and if your thing is true, like if your suspect matches, then you put it on one side to indicate this is a matching thing, and if it doesn't, you put it on another side. And so as things are going around, people are trying to figure out what
your
clue is based on what they've said is in common.
Yep.
Eventually the way it works out is when you believe that you have figured it out, you put your hand on...
You put your little dog token.
Or you put the dog token or whatever it is on the suspect.
On the suspect. And then nobody else can guess that suspect. So once someone guesses, everybody has to guess.
Mm-hmm.
And your goal, if you're not the first person, is to get as close as you can.
Right.
So if you see one that you think has 4 out of the 5 characteristics.
Yep. Then you'd put it on there and so on and so forth. So that was a kind of a neat little game. I was surprised that our 9-year-old was confused by it. It didn't seem that complicated. I don't know if maybe the day was starting to get to her because this was Friday.
Yeah. I think further play would probably make it feel easier.
Okay.
They also showed us Fast Food Fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cooperative game.
Right.
With kind of set collection, kind of speed matching. Mm-hmm. You're working together as, like, waiters in a diner, I guess. Trying to serve up these aliens the food that they want.
Right. It had a lot of kind of almost Castle Panic-like elements in the sense that you are cooperatively trying to work together. So only different monsters come in and they have a different set of items they want to eat. So anybody can feed a monster and satiate them, but you have to play all of the monster stuff at the same time.
Right.
So you're having a conversation around the table. Well, I've got this thing. You know, I need somebody. We need to figure out a way for you to get that thing to me, because trading wasn't necessarily an aspect. So people would have to play a card that says 2 players swap a card, stuff like that. And so there's a lot of that kind of, I've got this, I need this, working back and forth.
Yeah.
To make sure this stuff works out. And then there's, of course, like an eating timer or something like that to make sure that you
get your adrenaline.
You can lose the game, basically. Yeah. So that was kind of a neat little game. And then we play this game called Dragons and Chickens. once again, the savant 6-year-old.
He did really well at one aspect of this game, and that one aspect was enough to get him some points. So Dragons and Chickens is a pattern recognition, kind of like Spot It, but you have a hierarchy of several different actions depending on what you see in the cards that come out.
So the mechanic of the game is that everybody has a card, and then they all reveal their top card at the same time. This is a blind draw from their individual decks. So these cards are all pictures of a dungeon. Right. And
Dragon's treasure hoard.
Right. And so there's little like icons at the bottom that indicate which treasures are in each room.
Mm-hmm.
However, if there is any piece of a dragon showing on any of the cards, you have to put your hand on that card.
Yes.
And then basically the last person to get their hand on top loses any treasure in their personal stash that they had gained over the course of the game that has icons that are shared on the card that had the dragon on it.
Yeah.
Additionally, if there are any cards where the torch in the sconce on the wall is out, you can just kind of take that, and it becomes part of your treasure.
If you spot that, you can grab that card that where the room is dark, and grab it right away before anybody starts looking at the other stuff.
Right. And then finally, if neither of those two conditions is true, or actually whether the torch is on or not,
yeah.
with everything that's left, you have to put your hand on and declare whatever treasure appears the most.
Yes.
If there's a tie, there's something that happens if there's a tie.
You put your hand on a little like treasure chest thing.
Oh, yes. That's right.
And that, again, the first person to get their hand on the chest gets something, and the last person gets nothing.
So
the chickens come in as protection from the dragon.
Right. So if you have a chicken card, and
otherwise worthless, but it'll protect you from the dragon stealing your treasure.
Right. If you have a chicken card and you are the last one to notice the dragon, you can just kind of give them the chicken card and be on your way.
So it's silly and fun and fast. It could get frustrating for kids or adults really who aren't really good at that speed matching part. Our 6-year-old did surprisingly well because he just looked for a dragon every time to get his hand in there first if there was any piece of a dragon.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's actually a game that we did get in for review as well. So we'll go into a little bit more detail in a review on that game.
Once we've played it some more.
Yep. So that was Dragons and Chickens from Dever Americas.
All right. USAopoly showed us Codenames Disney, which we already talked about. They also showed us Super Mario Level Up. It's set up kind of like a staircase, and each stair has a higher point value.
Mm-hmm.
Each player gets a card that has a cast of 6 Mario characters on it.
Right. It's hidden.
Hidden card. You all take you take turns, but rather than roll dice or play cards or whatever, you just say, okay, on this turn, I want to move Bowser up one step. I want to move Peach up one step. It doesn't matter. Well, I mean, it matters, but you are the master of your fate.
Right.
Sort of. You can move any character. They always move up. As you move up, you collect power-ups, and the power-ups do various things. Move a character down, move a character up, move a character all the way back to the beginning. Stuff like that. Skip someone's turn. Pretty standard stuff. The really interesting part of this is when a character reaches the top stair, which is worth the most points by a lot. It's like 0 through 5 and then 10.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets to vote. Does that character get to stay on the top step and then the round is going to be over and we'll score everybody's points? Or does that character get kicked off and the round keeps going? So there's some real strategy in that part to say, well, it's not my guy, you know, it's not my guy up there at 10, but man, the rest of my guys are in a really good place right now. Right. Like they're all on 4 and 5.
So. Right. So every player only gets two
times that they kick them off and vote. No. Yeah.
And the only way that a player can a character can stay on the top is that they're unanimously accepted.
Unanimously, yes. Yep. Right.
So it's an interesting game because you kind of have to keep an eye on who's moving what guys up the staircase or whatever it is, because that's how you determine whether or not you think someone has that character at a high rank on their card. So
yeah, there's some real social interplay in this game, mm-hmm. which I think is great. We also have that one for review. So when we play it more, expect a fuller review.
Yeah, and we'll talk about our panel later. But big ups to USAopoly. They donated a copy of Codenames Disney to give away on the panel, which was super awesome of them. I think we're gonna have a good working relationship with USAopoly going forward. We do have an interview with them that'll be on next week's show.
Yep.
So. They were awesome to work with.
So while I hung out some more at USAopoly, you went over to Yana Gowana.
Yeah, so Yana Gowana Games they're relatively local. The guy who runs it, Marshall Britt, is out of the Providence area, Providence, Rhode Island area. Okay. We've seen them at Boston Fig in the past.
We missed them at Boston Fig.
Well, I wanted to play the game Record, which is what we're talking about, but they're table was just like crush packed
at Fig, yeah,
and I was shocked to hear that their Kickstarter did not go particularly well, but it turns out that there were some other real heavy hitters on Kickstarter at the same time, so they just had some timing issues. Yeah, really, exactly. And so what Record is a game where all of the pieces, so there's a mat, and the mat has you know, play instructions on it, but the main play part is a fretboard for a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
All of the pieces that you're placing are guitar picks.
Oh, cool.
And so what happens is you've got, this is very, very general mechanics. You've got some chord cards in your hand. And what those chord cards basically say are that you need to play certain chords down with these picks, which are different colors. And there's also some wild picks as well. And when you've got a chord played, you put down that card, you get some points for that. Anytime one of the frets is filled with picks, the whole mat scores.
Okay.
And so you get points for each color, you know, because each person has a genre card, which is a pick color, basically.
Okay.
And so you would score points for all of your picks of that color. And then there's a way that you can play a chord a second time, basically.
You can re-chord?
Yeah, you can re-chord, but also the premise is that the first time you play it, you're learning it, and the second time you're now a rock star, and you're in the studio, and you are recording yourself playing the chord. It's a really neat game that has a lot of that music feel to it, and the mechanics are interesting enough that it doesn't feel like it's just kind of this theme is pasted onto something like that. We only had like the chance to play a round or two, and so I didn't get a really good feel for those mechanics, but everything, the way you explained it, sounds really, really fun, and I definitely want to sit down and play that more.
We will definitely keep an eye on it when it comes back to Kickstarter.
Yeah, for sure. And we were invited down to go to the Providence Game Club, so
cool. We
should do that. All we have to do is bring some beer.
I think we can manage that. Did you play Stir Fry 18?
I did not play Stir Fry 18 because we ran out of time, because we had to get over to Dr. Finn's games.
Stephen Finn is a fantastic game designer.
Mm-hmm. He's made a ton of games. I was honestly really impressed at just how many games.
He had games represented at several different publishers.
Yep.
PAX. But he, in particular, showed us his game, The Little Flower Shop.
Which was adorable.
It was... adorable's not quite the word I would use, but, you know, pretty.
Okay. You're a girl.
Well, it's not like small animal adorable.
Okay, right? Sure. I wasn't. It wasn't like aww, yeah, but it was nice.
It was cute. It's a great intro to card drafting, because you're passing the hand of cards, taking one, and putting it in your flower shop. The cards can be vases, flowers, special hanging plants,
or shopkeepers.
And the goal is to fill your little board that is your shop window, with the best, most expensive flowers that you can.
Not so much about the most expensive flowers. Well, the vases are all you get points based on how many petals are on the floor, which is not necessarily related to how many flowers are in the vase.
It's not related to how many flowers are in the vase. It's more often related to what kinds of flowers are in the vase.
Right.
So,
but that was a neat game, very beautifully drawn. I think that was another Beth Sobel production.
Yes, it was.
He does a lot of work with Beth, who is one of the current amazing artists in board games right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was great. We wrapped up Friday by going to the Creativity Hub and reintroducing ourselves to Rory O'Connor.
Yep. Who is a fine... Well, this is your first time meeting him in person, though.
In person, yeah. Yes.
We met him on... You met him on the internet before.
We met him on video when we did our interview before.
So you and Claire played, two games of Blank with him?
Yes.
Two games of Blank. Okay. So talk about Blank.
So Blank...
It's the new hotness.
It is the new hotness. I saw something which I think is great. It's a great intro to game design is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
On the face of it, plays a lot like Uno or Crazy 8. You match color or number. It's got additional rules, so it feels a tiny bit like Flux. You pull out three rule cards at random at the beginning of the game. So it's like, when a 5 is played, switch direction of play. When a 4 is played,
do my some other thing, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You know, if a purple card is played, the next player must name an animal.
Right.
Weird stuff like
or
that.
Must act and talk very slowly.
So that's not a rule card. That is a game effect card.
Oh, excuse me.
Game effect cards are normal suited cards with numbers on them that also happen to have an effect written on them.
Right.
So that's one that's been played on me several times now. You know, pick a player. That player must talk and act very slowly.
Yes. So we had
rest of the game.
We had Anitra the Ent at the dinner table.
So you go on. The one other odd thing about the game is that you're allowed to play multiple cards on your turn.
Right. As long as the top one matches.
No, they all need to be playable.
But the next person only has to match the top one.
The next person only has to match the top one. But it's a way to, if there are too many customized cards in there that you really just hate, you can tuck them in under another one and be like, okay, so this number still matches, but we're not playing that
card. Right, so if you had three fours in your hand and you needed to match fours, you could just be like...
Yep, all of those fours, great. The other takeaway is that the winner gets to customize a card.
Mm-hmm.
So either create a new rule card, or customize one of the game effect cards, which
and
can
so,
be anything in the deck.
Yep, so lots of the cards are basically only a color and a number, and they have a few lines at the bottom, and the winner is able to just kind of pick one. I mean, obviously, it's your game, you can kind of do whatever you want. But the winner picks one and kind of names it and puts a little rule in.
Yep.
So one of the cool things that they want you to do is kind of meta is when you create a new rule, take a picture of that card and tweet it to them. It's @creativity_hub and use the hashtag #blankrules.
Blank rules.
Because it's a new blank rule and blank rules.
Blank rules.
So we're all about the puns today. None of them are ours.
None of them are ours. We are definitely on track to turn our copy of Blank into a game where you just draw lots of cards, discard lots of cards, and do silly things along the way, which I think will be great.
Yeah.
But you can customize it to work however you want. If you are interested in game design, this is a super easy way to dip your toe in.
Right, because what Rory recommended is that you basically draft your game rule without writing it on the card until you've kind of thought it through and then said, okay, now we'll write it on the card. Because one story that he was telling was that he played with a lot of kids who really liked writing these rules out that were like super nasty, because all they imagined was them playing these cards on other people, and then they would play the game again and other people would play those cards on the creators of those rules, and they'd be like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting way to kind of change some perspective and see how do we create rules that are more balanced and figure it out.
So something we've mentioned with our kids when we're creating a new rule is let's talk it through first, because we've already had one instance of trying to erase on the card and
it just doesn't go well.
Not so good. Let's talk it through first, and how would you feel if this was played on you?
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I thought was the nastiest, which was a beginning of the game rule, first player draws 10 cards and then replace this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Our daughter who came up with the rule was like, no, I think I would kind of like that because it gives me a much bigger hand to start with and you can start just playing cards out like gangbusters.
Especially with a game like this where you can play multiple cards at the same time.
Yes.
So that makes a huge difference.
It makes a huge difference. There's one other piece of news with that. The Creativity Hub has plans in the works to release booster packs for Blank.
Oh, cool.
From famous, air quote, game designers.
Mm-hmm. I do remember talking to him about this because they didn't want to say any names of people who would officially be involved in the project.
Yes.
So you could think of games like... like Uwe Rosenberg, who does a lot of worker placement related stuff. You play a Uwe Rosenberg game and you're like, this feels like a Uwe Rosenberg game. And so if, let's just say, and again, they
we
did
have
not
no
confirm
idea.
Or deny, this is not in any way related to anything Creativity Hub is saying. Let's say they released a Uwe Rosenberg pack. probably some of those mechanics would feel like, would feel pretty similar.
Yeah.
So that's a really neat idea. I really like that.
I think it would be pretty cool.
And I think it'll help people who are having fun making rules see within the same construct that they had to work with
what
other truly skilled designers did.
Yeah.
So that'll be neat.
I agree.
The other game that we looked at the Creativity Hub was Untold. And we had Rory on for an interview during the Untold Kickstarter. We have a lengthy interview for the show next week. So I don't want to talk about it too much. But basically, it is a more structured version of Rory's Story Cubes. It uses Story Cubes to play the game. And it's kind of an exceptionally lightweight RPG with no stat stuff. It's really more about the storytelling. The game allows some randomness in how reactions are, and how events are reacted to, success, failure kind of thing, and gives structure to the storytelling. I watched about 25 minutes of one group playing, and it was really neat. It was really, really cool. We have that for review. I'm super stoked to bring that one to the table. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So that was the Creativity Hub.
That was Friday.
It was a long day.
As you can tell listening, it was a really long day, and you can begin to understand why our kids were kind of burnt out by the end. But Saturday was better. So let's
Saturday was a lot
quick,
better.
Quick break, and then we'll talk about Saturday. So, Saturday. More PAX Unplugged. We started out Saturday by going straight to Calliope Games.
Yeah, Calliope Games has, I think, maybe the most well-known game from Calliope is a game called Roll For It, which I have played before. I don't know if you've ever played it. We don't own it or anything like that. So.
Do they also make Get Bit?
I don't think so. I think Get Bit is Mayday. But they do make a game that has got some buzz. It's had some buzz this year, and we got to play it, a full game of it, called Dicey Peaks.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. It's a press-your-luck game. You're rolling dice to either climb up towards the summit of the mountain or to rest and refill your oxygen tank.
Right. So everybody is a mountain climber, trying to get to the summit first.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's kind of this risk reward race to do it. Like you said, press your luck. There's also this element of a Yeti in the game.
A Yeti who wants to chase you and take all your oxygen.
Right.
More or less. I thought it was really interesting that depending on whether you decide that you're resting or you decide that you're climbing, your bust condition, your fail condition is different.
Right. Yeah, one of the neat things about this game is that there's three different sets of dice that come into play. There's the rest set, there's the climb set, and then there's kind of a medium set.
It's the daytime set and the nighttime set, and then the in-between.
And so you don't have to decide whether you're climbing or resting until after you've rolled the medium set of dice.
Your first set of dice,
And that's really neat if you're, because the way it works is you have an oxygen tank that goes from 1 to 9 units of oxygen in it. And so if you're in the middle, you might not really know if you want to
rest or
if you want to like make a push to the summit. And so you can let the dice decide.
Sometimes the dice decide you're going nowhere.
That happened to us a few times. And it was actually really cool. So the one of the pieces to it that's sort of neat is if there are people behind you and you roll some Yetis, they get to move. There's some mechanics around it, but they get to move up one.
The Yetis chase the people behind you.
And there's no harm to them or whatever.
Yeah.
But also kind of cool is as you're climbing up the mountain, whatever tile you land on, you flip that tile over. And so there's some random benefit or penalty to that. And it might be, oh, hey, you get some extra, you find an extra oxygen tank or whatever, or you get to move
more oxygen.
Or you lose oxygen, or you move up a space, or you move down a space, or maybe you just get to enjoy the view from this nice piece of the mountain. And the other thing that's really cool is the summit is actually 3 hidden tiles.
Yeah.
And so when you make the push to the summit, once you get onto the summit, you pick which one you want to land on, and that's the one you flip over. And so it's a total crapshoot, basically.
It is pretty much by chance. This is definitely a game where it would depend highly on your group. We had a blast playing it as a family, being very friendly with it. You could play it super competitively, And if your group likes playing that way, you would still enjoy this game. Just keep in mind the group before you play it, is really how it goes. So you had another appointment, but Claire and I stayed and played another full game called Ancestry.
I'm bummed that I missed this. This is a game I actually really did want to check out.
It was really neat. You build a family tree through card drafting.
Mm-hmm.
The cards, each card is a person. They have leaves, which indicate parents or children, you know, top or bottom. And there are hearts, which are side to side for marriages. Each round of the cards, you're putting another card down, another card down. At the end of each round, the players gain money based on what's on their cards. Plus, you get these kind of prestige points for having a better lineage in a certain color than the people on either side of you. So in a three-player game, it's not a deal-breaker. But if you played like a five- or six-player game, you're really only competing with the people on either side of you, not with the whole table.
You're keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sweet.
I have a better family than you do.
Yes.
Yes. So it was neat. It was not high stress.
Okay.
And it was more funny than beautiful. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Okay. So not high marks on the art, I guess?
It was intentionally drawn to be
okay, so more guillotine
yeah.
style? Yeah. Okay.
We also got a chance to really briefly look at a game called Shutterbug.
Mm-hmm.
This is a set collecting game where you play as a freelance photographer and you are on assignment for some, you know, tabloid newspaper trying to get the best possible picture of a mythological creature.
Okay.
So you're traveling to different spots on this hexagonal board.
You're putting dry ice in the bucket. You're leaning over the bathtub. You're taking the photo.
Not quite. but you don't know until after you get to a certain spot. You know what you're going to be able to take a picture of there, but it could be, like, super blurry. It could be, you can tell what's there, but it's still a little hazy, or it could be beautifully crisp and clear. And you're trying to, you know, collect a certain amount of photos depicted with points, certain number of points, and then get back to your tabloid.
Okay.
It's a neat concept, all the more so because it was originally envisioned as a hunting game, and they tried to figure out how to make it so that you weren't going around and killing animals and bagging their heads.
Oh, lovely. I mean, sounds interesting, I guess. Obviously I played Dicey Peaks and I'm really interested in Ancestry. That's definitely something I would have to try out, I guess.
We didn't get to try it. We just got to sort of get a real quick demo.
Okay. Okay.
But it's neat. The art on this is spot on. I mean, it's set in like the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so back when photography of anything felt like a dangerous hobby still.
Sure.
And, you know, you got the secret assignment and tips from your editor and all kinds of stuff like that.
Interesting. So that's Shutterbug?
That is Shutterbug.
All right. Well, while you were playing those games, I went to Greater Than Games. They had a kind of a back demo room, so we had to mm-hmm. we did traipse all the way over there for that. We took a look at some stuff. So the first thing that I did not expect at all is, so Greater Than Games has the license for Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Okay.
Which is a co-op superhero battle game. And what they have released basically as of Unplugged was the starter pack for the Sentinels of the Multiverse RPG. They're going to release a full-blown formal rulebook next year, but this starter pack included six scenarios and something like six completely pre-generated characters and a little kind of guidebook for whoever is, you know, GMing the experience, which will be me.
Always.
it's a full RPG, dice rolling, event playing, all that kind of stuff. So, that'll be kind of something that's interesting to check out. So it's set in that Sentinels of the Multiverse universe. So these are not licensed superheroes. They're completely separate you know, superheroes.
But they may look a little familiar, but they're not. Well, yeah, not exactly the same.
They look like superheroes, yeah. Right? So I would say probably more Marvel-y than DCE.
sure.
If you want. Then we sat down, Asher and I sat down and played a game of Laser Riders. So this is a game that I saw back at PAX East that I was really excited to check out. And the premise of this game is basically that there's you're in outer space and you have a little thing that's shooting a laser. And you have you're riding on this laser, right? You're a laser rider.
Sure.
And so you can set your gear, which is your speed, basically, from 1 to 5. And you have these physical pieces that you lay down, depending on what gear you're in, to try to navigate around on a table.
Okay.
And hit these kind of hex crystal tokens that have just been tossed on the table. And the first person to get 3 crystal tokens wins. The game obviously takes up a ton of space, right?
Yeah,
so at home, you're hard-pressed, even on our dining room table, which is not enormous, but not small. That would be tough. That's a tough fit. So this is a game probably best suited for the floor in the normal human being's house. or like you would need a 6-foot round or an 8-foot round table to play a game like this. And so the neat thing about this is obviously as you are at higher gears, the curves are more gradual because you're going faster, so you can't curve as much. You can't measure things out, so you have to kind of eyeball it. So if you put something down and you're like, whoops, guess what?
Too bad.
And then there's the mechanics for if you're, it's still, even though you're in space, it's a two-dimensional plane. So you can't go above or below other lasers. You would crash into them and, you know, you would, you would go down to gear one and stuff like that. I mean, that's pretty much the game in a nutshell. There's some other mechanics involved where if you want to turn, you'd have to roll a die, and if you fail, then you have to put a straight piece down instead, and that might cause you to crash or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's some mechanics around those kinds of things, but that's pretty much the game. It was fun. Asher won, of course. and then we saw another game there called Spirit Island, which was we just watched it. We didn't play it or anything. It's a 13-plus worker placement game that's been getting a fair amount of buzz after the show, where basically you are trying to ward off evil spirits. You are like, you're like the mother nature, Tefiti, basically, of this island, and you're trying to ward off the evil spirits.
Okay.
So it's kind of a cool-looking game. Nice art on that as well. Again, we just watched it for like 5 minutes, but sure. It has been getting some pretty good buzz. So that was Greater Than Games.
All right. I think from there, you went to Arcane Wonders?
Arcane Wonders was maybe my favorite booth on Saturday, was Arcane Wonders.
It might have been Asher's as well.
So Arcane Wonders, the game that they made it with is Sheriff of Nottingham. That's Arcane Wonders. So they released an expansion to that called the Merry Men or something like that, which adds a lot of other mechanics to the game. We only talked about that briefly with Tony Galati, the marketing guy over there. But we did sit down and play Viral. Viral is a game that came out this year. It's an area control game where you're basically playing as viruses in the human body. And depending on where you, depending on what's going on, you're trying to gather victory points by controlling areas of the human body. But the neat thing is that there's also research that happens. So if you control an area where research occurs during the scoring phase, this research track goes up. And if that research track gets maxed, then that means researchers found a cure for your virus. And you wipe all of your virus off the board.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then that research thing gets set back to zero. The thing is, research happens. Like, it's a part of the game. It's a mechanic of the game. And so what you kind of have to do is find a way where if you know you're going to hit that research thing, make sure you're getting a lot of points that round. Mm. But there's a lot of really cool mechanics around that. There's – and we talk about it in the interview. there's the way the blood flows through the system is very specific. So you can't just move from body part to body part.
Yeah. You have to move as the blood flows around the body.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. And there's little upgrades that you can do. You can kind of shield your stuff so it won't get destroyed maybe during research. Mm. It'll just get, you know, unshielded or whatever. And so there's some stuff like that. There's a lot of different dynamics around that. There's the art is fantastic. It's definitely a little like tongue-in-cheek, I guess. Like the main virus on the cover reminds me of the thousand-eyed monster from Monty Python, for example.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, that kind of thing. So it's kind of scary and friendly art at the same time. Bright colors, really interesting to look at. Really cool game. We went into the Arcane Wonders booth. Our note said Viral and other games. Yeah. So we were very excited to get a chance to sit down and play some Viral. I actually moved on to talk about another game and left Asher. I mean, I was right next to him, but he played Viral with some adults and was fine. So, yes, one of the things we learned this week
that we have over PAX is that
we have an aspiring heavy gamer. But he was able to play after really one playthrough where he and I sat together. And I think that says something. The other game that I saw at Arcane Wonders, which I loved it, was a game called Onitama. Now, this game is built for you and I sitting on the porch with glasses of wine in, like, late June, just playing a nice, relaxing game of Onitama. Onitama is a very chess-like game. There's a 5x5 grid, and there's a deck of cards, and at the beginning of the game you deal two cards to each player and one card in the middle. And what these cards are movement cards, and it'll say like fox or snake or whatever, and you have these two cards in front of you, and you have so 5x5 grid, so you've got four of these kind of basically pawn-like tokens and one master. Mm-hmm. And the master is in the middle of the row closest to you, which is kind of like your little temple, this little icon on the mat. And then the other four are in the other four positions. And basically what happens is any of your pieces can move the way that one of your two cards says to move. So the card has a black spot and some shaded spots. And so any of your pieces can move to any of those shaded spots. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you take the card that you use to move, you put it in the middle, and you take the card that's in the middle, and you put it in front of you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the other player goes. And so there you're going back and forth. It's kind of this abstract strategy game. It's a lot like chess, but it's unlike chess in the sense that there is no defined move for a particular piece.
Right.
It's always based on the two cards that are in front of you. It's very relaxing. It's very elegant. I just, in the middle of a crowded convention hall, it was a nice, you know, contemplative experience to play this game.
Sure.
So that's Onitama. There's an expansion for that just came out as well. I loved both of those games that I played at Arcane Wonders.
Sure.
A lot. I really like both of them.
Sure. While you were there, we went and talked to Gigamic,
mm-hmm.
Who listeners of this show may know as the makers of Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've talked about in the past. They are working hard to change their perception in the U.S. Because they have a couple of games that all start with Q that are abstract puzzle games, and that's all they're known for. So they are starting to come into the U.S. market with a vengeance. We did, however, start off there with a puzzle game anyway. Catamino. This game... It is a puzzle game with variable difficulty levels baked right in.
That's cool.
The levels went from 3 to 12. And playing through it quickly, we played level 3, and then we played level 4, and then we played level 5, and then we said, we tried level 6, and we said, no, I think we have other things we need to do. So if you like puzzles and you want to be able to do these puzzly kind of games with your kids, Catamino is an awesome game for that. It's basically you have a board and these Tetris-like pieces, and you get a card or a graph or something that says, okay, well, if you're playing a level 3 puzzle, you know, pick one of these puzzles, you know, A through N or whatever. For this puzzle, you're going to be on level 3, and you take these three pieces, fit them in. On your board, there are slots for each level 3, 3, 4, 5, whatever. And there's a bar that slots in there. So the level 3 puzzle is easy, but it's also very small.
Mm-hmm.
Level 4 is slightly larger because you need to fit one more piece. Level 5 is, you know, you fit one more piece. So it feels like they should build on each other, but they actually don't. Each puzzle is its own thing. We thought it was great. They showed us a couple of other games there very, very quickly. Yogi, which is a card game where as you play cards, each card specifies something that you have to do with your body. So it ends up being a little bit Twister-like, except you're not interacting with the other people on the table with around the table with your body. You're just twisting your own body into strange and unusual shapes.
Okay.
So like one card might say, hold this card in two hands for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. Or in both hands.
Right.
You can decide how you want to do that, you know, between fingers on both hands. You want to, you know, clasp it like a you know,
handshake. You're praying.
Whatever. Well, what then if you get a card that says, this card must be touching your chin for the rest of the game? Well, either you now have both hands right up next to your chin, or you're trying to hold it, you know, old school telephone style between your chin and your shoulder while you're also still holding the card with two hands. It definitely has the potential to get crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us a game to review called POW, which is themed around making a comic book.
Okay.
More on that later once we've played it.
So you haven't even played it yet?
Haven't even played it yet.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even get a chance to go over there at all. Yeah, so. No.
It was a nice booth.
Cool.
A lot of different stuff. While we were over there, I also had my eye caught by the Genius Games booth. The big game they were pushing is called Cytosis. If that sounds familiar, then you probably passed high school biology. Cytosis is a process that happens in your cell. And so this is a worker placement game that does accurately represent cell biology.
Well, that's the Genius Game shtick, right?
Yes.
Is accurate representation of scientific concepts.
Accurate representation with games that are still fun to play. We have an interview with John Coveyu that will be part of next week's show.
Awesome.
We finally met up again after that, and all of us together went to Renegade.
Yeah, talking about crazy booths. Their booth was...
Well, they were the sponsor. The main sponsor.
They were like mega hopping.
So
like it was.
Their booth was huge, and it needed to be because there
yeah,
were so
I had to turn sideways to
people.
Move through any two places at the Renegade booth. I mean, so credit to them because they had some really tremendous stuff there. We did not get a chance because I've already been asked to check out Ex Libris, which I really wanted to.
I know.
Unfortunately.
But they kind of looked at us and said, family gamers, you have kids. All right, let's show you some of our lighter games. And we're like, okay,
fine. We'll be responsible. So the first game we looked at was a game called Sunday Split.
Yep.
So Sunday Split, you played more of this than I did because I had to leave.
I had to
bring
take a child
to
the
bathroom.
It's an I Split, You Choose game. The idea being you're making ice cream sundaes, but there's nice things and not so nice things. So the dealer for each round sets out however many cards it is in exactly the right number of piles for the number of players.
But they can distribute the cards in any way they want.
They can distribute the cards any way they want. A few cards are required to be put in face down. So there's always a secret element to, well, there's a cherry on this pile, but then the other two cards are face down.
I thought you could choose to put cards face down if you wanted to, but you can only put a certain number of them face down.
No, I believe you have to put
cards
face down. But so under that cherry, all the other cards there are face down. They might be ice cream, they might be banana, which is a multiplier, or they might be broccoli.
Which is delicious.
Broccoli is delicious, but not in a sundae.
Accurate.
So it's a nice, simple game. Can get pretty competitive, but it's got that social element of, you know, are you trying to trick me into taking this pile, or are you trying to save this pile for yourself?
Right.
We also played Castles of Caladale. This is a tile-laying building game where you're building these really crazy-looking castles. The idea behind the game is a wizard's apprentice was testing out a spell and blew up not only his own castle that he was in with the wizard, but also their three neighbors.
Boo!
And so now each of the players is trying to rebuild a new dwelling from all the rubble left behind. Mm-hmm. The tiles are beautiful. There are four different kinds of building. There's a stone castle. There's a Tudor house kind of thing. There's a fairy tree house. And you're trying to match up the pieces to get a complete building, you know, sky all the way around, base on the ground, all that sort of things. The thing that really caught me about it is that in the rules, you are allowed to rearrange your tiles at any time, as long as you can, you know, still make them fit the other overall rules. And you are also allowed to lay tiles aside if you took a tile but ended up not being able to place it. You can save it for later. So being able to rearrange at any time makes this game a whole lot more forgiving than other tile laying, building type games that I've seen. And the little bit that we played of it, we really enjoyed it.
Awesome. So while you were at Renegade doing Castles of Caladale, I took Claire over to ELO.
Hi, ELO.
And unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to play a lot of games, although I think we have Sticky Chameleon in for a review from them. But Claire and I sat down with Allison Hayslip to talk about some of the stuff that they're working on. It was a very casual interview. We talked a little bit about Mountains of Madness, which is a Rob Davio designed game about trying to climb a mountain or something like that, but everybody's going crazy. Some of the mechanics in the game are as you slowly go mad, there are things that you're not able to do anymore, like say numbers. So you have to say other things that would represent a number. So the example that Allison used was if you needed to say the number 7, you would say something like, I have July pieces of food left in my package, you know, or something like that, you know, things, stuff like that. And, or, you know, you have to, there's some physical things as well, you know, some of that same kind of stuff that you were talking about, from the Gigamic booth. But, it was kind of a neat experience. Claire was pretty nervous. It was pre-panel. So, she I don't think she was starstruck, but I think just the concept of interviewing in general was something that she was pretty nervous with.
Sure.
But we had a good time doing that. It was kind of a neat and fun experience for her to do that. And there's an adorable picture of Claire and Allison.
Yay!
That's out on the Facebook. I don't know if it's on the Family Gamers page. I'll have to make sure it's over there. So, that was ELO, which we did really, really quickly.
On the, our son is turning into a heavy gamer. Starting once he saw the game, I think it was Saturday morning, he started asking me, can we go play this game? Can we go play this game? Over at Tasty Minstrel Games, who also had a fairly large booth, they most of their games are quick playing small games. This one is not. It's called Chimera Station.
Yeah, true confession. I took one look at this game and I was like, bro, this game's not for you.
Yeah. But he kept asking over and over and over again, can I please go play this game? Can I please? And so eventually I was just like, fine. We promised that on Saturday we would do more things you guys wanted to do. Let's go do it. Chimera Station is a 60 to 90 minute worker placement game. It's supposed to be 14 plus.
My mind is
my
blown.
My 6-year-old did an excellent job playing it. He didn't score well, but he played the game just fine. The unique thing about Chimera Station and the worker placement is that you can upgrade your workers. Physically upgrade your workers.
Yeah.
They're aliens, and so you can snapped their head apart from their little tentacly feet.
I snapped his legs off.
And slot in a new piece in between. So it can be a brain, which gets you more more points, or it can be these little crab claws that let you push other people around, or little tentacles that let you just get more stuff, whatever you have a worker on. Or it can be a little thing with leaves, so now the worker can make its own food, and you don't have to feed him anymore.
Nice. Hence the chimera, by the way.
Yes.
I like that.
That's why they're chimera.
That's clever.
I gotta say, like, I thought it was going to be way over his head, but he did fine. I wouldn't recommend it for other six-year-olds.
Yeah.
But it's not as heavy as the 14-plus age range would make you think.
Okay, cool. So if you've got a gamer in the family, it can be approachable.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
It's a little pricey because, I mean,
of all
you've, got, you've got all these custom plastic pieces that snap together like Lego.
Sure.
So.
Cool.
But
awesome.
It was a neat game.
Well, while you were doing that, I took Claire over to the Bezier booth, and we checked out two games, which did really well for them. When I stopped by Bezier on Sunday, they had four copies of Whistle Stop left.
And, wow.
And when I was there on Saturday, they had already completely sold out of New York Slice.
Wow.
So New York Slice was the first game that we played. This is an I Pick, You Choose game, just like Sunday Split.
Sure.
The premise, unsurprisingly, is that you are ordering pizza. By the way, I have been craving pizza since last Saturday, and I still have not had pizza.
I'm
so
sorry.
So we need to fix this problem
it's
somehow,
hard to do
somewhere.
Pizza at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I guess suppose that's true. But basically what you're doing is the picker is setting out stacks of slices of pizza.
Pizza slices, okay.
And so you look at those stacks and you more or less decide whether or not you want to take that stack and add it to your pie, right? And
sure.
When you add them, you can make the choice between putting them into your pie or eating them. Eating the pieces. And
okay.
If you eat pieces, you get points for the pepperonis that are on the pieces that you've eaten.
Okay.
At the end of the game.
Gotcha.
So you're building out this pie. The neat thing is that every slice has a number on it. And so at the end of the game, you go through and you score, like, who's got the most twos? That person wins.
Oh,
that person
okay.
gets 2 points. Who's got the most threes? That person gets 3 points. Who's got the most fours? That person gets 4 points, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's also some slices that are halves, and they literally count for a half a slice.
Okay.
So you go through that whole thing at the end of the game. There's a couple of kind of like daily specials. One of them is like, oh, you like anchovies. So instead of anchovies being negatives at the end of the game, they're positives for you and some stuff like that.
Okay.
They're real pictures of real pizzas.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. That looks pretty tasty.
That game looks delicious. So it's real pictures of real pizzas. And the score pad is like a waiter's guest check.
Yeah.
Pad. And it's, I mean, it's a standard I Pick, You Choose game, which generally speaking, those games aren't super deep. Which is fine.
Yeah.
But, it was a lot of fun and Claire destroyed me and the games editor for Newsweek, and some other gentleman who was also media at the game. And then Claire and I and two other fine folks went over and started up a game of Whistle Stop.
I was going to say, did you say you got to play Whistle Stop?
I did. So Whistle Stop is a tiling train game where basically what you're doing is you are collecting resources and you're able to use those resources to do certain things. You can kind of like upgrade your trains to have better abilities. And you're moving from the premise of the game is that you are trying to be the best rail baron moving across the United States. So the Golden okay. Spike has already been set, but you are trying to expand your empire.
Okay.
So you're moving across the board. And you're picking up these resources. Those resources can be used to purchase upgrades or to trade. As you get closer towards the end, there's like trading posts and stuff right at the middle of the board. If you look at a picture of the board, you'll see the line in the middle. You can also use your resources to purchase stock, And the stock is very similar to the way they do stock in Ticket to Ride Pennsylvania, where the first stock is implicitly more valuable than the stocks after it because it's the tiebreaker, stuff like that. So when you have the most stock for a certain company at the end of the game, those things can add to your victory point totals as well. So it's very much a resource management tile laying game. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a nice game. I would like to play more of it. There were some curious design decisions that I didn't particularly care for. Okay. Like all the trains were pastel colors, so I had to look at them really hard to figure out which ones were whose, which I thought, I mean, that's something that's really easy to fix.
Yeah.
But it went with like the color scheme of the game. So I get it. It was just obnoxious. I think it just does a lot of things really well, and that's why a lot of people like it so much. Definitely don't have a problem with it at all. It was a little pricey as well.
Yeah.
But that was Whistle Stop. It was really nice.
That was the end of our day on Saturday. Man, I'm hungry just thinking about the end of that day. We were so ready to go eat. And we all played food games.
Oh.
All right. So Sunday. Sunday was a lot less busy. For us and for the con. Mm-hmm.
Sunday was family day. Yep. There were a lot of families that were there and playing games, and I thought that was awesome.
Yes. Sunday was our panel, which I think went really well.
So, I thought so. We had about 35 people there, 30 people there, something like that. The panel vibe at PAX Unplugged wasn't very strong. I
heard that from other people too, just like the panels were kind of like, I'm not really sure why I would want to go here. So,
well, I mean, you're definitely going to a show like PAX Unplugged to play games a lot more so than an East or something like that.
Yeah.
And in general, the population volume was lower at Unplugged than it was at one of the other conventions. We can talk about that later, but, I think the panel went well. The kids were good. They were able to contribute to the panel, which was the most important part. They
had actual input, which was great.
We had just really an amazing contribution from USIopoly, which I mentioned, FunWiz, which is the imprint of FoxMind. They donated a couple games. They donated some Sports Size Baseball. Bellwether Games donated 5 copies of Wind Up War to give away, which was incredible. So
was awesome.
We were able to give away a bunch of stuff, which was super, super cool. And we talked a lot about what playing games with the kids looked like. One person flat out said, your panel was awesome. And that was amazing. To have anybody say that was amazing.
It felt really good to know that people thought our panel was worthwhile, even after they went to it.
Right, just, exactly. Not just before. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I took video, I Facebook Lived it.
Yes.
And so it's not the best angle and shot and stuff like that, but you definitely...
You can't actually see me at all, but that's fine.
You can take kind of a little
my
bit.
My hand occasionally.
I think when you lean forward, you could see... Anyway, it wasn't perfect in that sense, but you can at least get a sense for the content. If you go to thefamilygamers.com/familygamersaa, the video for that is posted up there. It's about 52 minutes long, maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
So feel free to check that out if you would like.
Yeah.
We're going to probably pitch it or something similar to East.
Something similar, I
think. So some of that content might work its way back around.
Yeah.
Again, I've already talked to some people that we might be able to work with. So
maybe a little bit more on the video game.
Yeah, well, of course. Well. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. But we did go play more games Sunday. We went over to Fireside Games.
Mm-hmm.
They are well known for Castle Panic, and they definitely wanted to show us that they do so much more than just Castle Panic.
Yes, they do.
I got a real quick look at Dead Panic, which I had not been interested in at all before this. We're kind of done with the whole zombie trope.
You know, we've never really been big zombie people anyway, in all fairness.
But seeing the quick demo, Dead Panic is not Castle Panic just reskinned with zombies.
Okay.
It is a different game with similar DNA.
Okay.
First of all, each player plays as a character in your little fort in the middle, and it's a zombie escape game. So what you're trying to do is find the pieces you need to call for help and then run out to the, I forget if it was a truck or a van or whatever, to get out of there. The zombies will just keep coming. There is no end to the zombies. You can run out and grab weapons and stuff like that, like many other zombie games. But the core of it, you roll the dice, you place the zombies. The zombies move, you know, slowly forward. You turn them to indicate damage. All of that is still the same as Castle Panic. The other thing I thought was really neat, since you have your various characters, obviously a character could get killed by the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, you are not out of the game. You now get to play as your character resurrected as a zombie.
Okay. I'm kind of interested in how that would work.
The guy there showed it to me real quickly that, like, literally, like, you take your player thing out, you have a new token, and now you get to play as one of the zombies.
Okay. Cool.
They are getting a lot of recognition for their newest co-op game, which is Hot Shots, where you are a team of firefighters fighting a wildfire. The theme on this is great. The research behind it must have been really thorough, because you can tell just as you're walking through it, it makes sense. You know, fires don't just especially out in the forest, fires don't just randomly appear. They're spread by wind. They're stopped by fire breaks. You know, they're not going to go across water, all those kinds of things. It's not unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to predict.
Right.
So there are plenty of other people who've talked about Hot Shots. It's a cool game.
Cool.
They have a competitive game called Kaiju Crush.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever wanted to be Godzilla destroying a city, Kaiju Crush is the game for you. Interestingly, the movement in Kaiju Crush is the same concept as what you explained for Onitama.
Okay.
You have a personal movement card and there is a public movement card.
Okay.
However, as you're moving around the board and claiming your points for crushing different things, you leave craters which then cannot be traversed.
Okay.
So if you play your cards right, ha ha ha, you can you could trap another monster player by not allowing them any movement cards that work in the place that they're at.
Got it. I get it.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. And the last one we saw there was a real simple lightweight game called Here Kitty Kitty.
Mm-hmm.
Cat games seem to be really popular this year. Here Kitty Kitty.
Cats are the new zombies.
Except you're trying to get the cats to come to you. That's actually the whole point of Here Kitty Kitty. You have a little player board with a yard, a porch, and a house. There is just a giant pile of little cat figurines in the center of the table. And each turn, you are trying to lure the cats in, you know, into your yard, into your, you know, and into your house. Your yard is worth 0 points, but it does count as, like, a cat that's on your property at the end of the game.
Okay.
So, it's pretty simple. You're pulling cats in, but then you can also play cards to, say, you know, make cats leave another person's porch and have them go back out to the neighborhood as a whole. And
interesting.
You get bonus points for having, like, all of the same color cat be in your house itself. Things like that. So, light, fun, pretty intuitive, and, you know, 60 tiny little cat figurines in 4 different colors.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So, That was fun. I believe I did a short interview there as well.
I spent most of Sunday getting ready for or decompressing from the panel. So I didn't get a chance to play a lot of games on Sunday. Plus, I had to leave early. but one thing I did get a chance to do is head over to the North Star Games booth, because our friend Jeff Jackson was doing some demos over there, and I sat down with Asher, and we were able to play Evolution: The Beginning. So this is a more simple version of Evolution, which was super popular from them, I think, last year. I talk about it in our little "What Are We Excited to Play?" video that's on the Facebook page. it's a neat game where basically you are evolving species. And so the way the game works is that at the beginning of your turn, you take a card and you put it face down to represent your new species. And then you draw two cards, and then you're able to play these kind of modifiers on your new species. And those modifiers are things like nocturnal or long neck or carnivorous or like fast or whatever the term is for fast. And so as your species evolves, you then have to, or you can grow your species. You can, if you don't like a trait, you can put it underneath to grow that species. And then, you have to eat plant food. There's kind of a common food supply, which is plant food, unless you're carnivorous, in which case you can then attack other species. At the end of your turn, once everything is fed, you take all those feed tokens and you put them in your bag, and that's your victory points, basically, at the end of the game. So you take your tokens plus all the cards that you have out and played, and then you add them all up, and that's your victory point total. We're going to put a full review of that game out on the site once we get a chance to play it a few times with the family. Very approachable game. Super approachable. Cool. Asher was fine with it. I mean, I no longer feel comfortable saying that our six-year-old being fine with a game means that it's approachable by six-year-olds after Chimera Station situation.
The Chimera Station thing was crazy.
He was able to understand the game immediately. So that'll be a neat one to play with the family and see really how everyone does with that game. So that is Evolution the Beginning. I mean, the art on it is really nice, too. They're really nice. They look like hand-drawn pictures. I liked it. I liked it a lot. Cool.
We saw Big Potato Games, which is actually a UK games company. They have lots of games in the UK, but they have two in the US. Those two games are OK Play and The Chameleon.
I actually have heard very good things about The Chameleon.
The Chameleon is supposed to be great. We only played OK Play.
That's fine.
And we got a copy of it to bring home. OK Play is basically tic-tac-toe without a board. You're trying to make five in a row with up to four players.
Okay.
It is designed so that you have these little individual tiles, and it's got this really neat carrying thing with a carabiner on it, so you can bring this game anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And they're literally plastic, anywhere. So...
Yeah, you I could mean, wash you, it if you needed to, I mean...
Or you could or play it on the water. Ground at, yeah. you know, while it's raining,
yeah.
kind of thing.
It's very simple to explain. You're like, you're trying to make five in a row. They're, you know, vertical, horizontal, diagonal. When you put a tile down, it has to touch another tile on a, you know, on a whole edge. Mm-hmm. You can't just touch at the corner. That's it. If you run out of tiles, well, now you get to start taking a tile out and moving it to a different spot.
Sure.
Which, you know, because tic-tac-toe can sometimes just be like, okay, we've reached a stalemate, nobody do it. Okay, well, you're guaranteed no more stalemates. You will keep playing until somebody can win.
Cool.
So, it's neat. It's compact. It's fun. You can buy it at Target. And I was really excited once you were gone on your errands for the day. I was really excited. I got to see, although not play, Ice Cool.
Awesome. I'm jealous. That game has had a lot of buzz.
I couldn't convince the kids to come play it with me, and I had to stay with them because I was now, you know, only parent.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really cute for, especially for a dexterity game. You're, you know, these little penguin students trying to go out and grab fish before the hall monitor can catch you. each round a player takes turns being the hall monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Each round, one of the players is a hall monitor. And the other players are all trying to flick themselves through the doorways of this board. And when you get through a doorway, you get a fish. Everything is rounded. The idea is that you're on ice and everything is sliding everywhere. It looks really fun, really well designed. It probably would not go over well in our house, so I'm hoping I can just play it the next time I go to a con.
Cool. Granite Game Summit, here we come.
Here we go.
All right. I think that's it.
I think that's enough.
Yeah, yeah, we're pretty fried just going through the show. So, I mean, big lessons for us from PAX Unplugged. You know, we did talk about cons with kids and what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Feedback is super important.
Yes.
Being able to have open conversation with your kids and being willing to alter your plans at least slightly, depending on, yes. on what their takeaways are. That was something that was hugely important for us, and it made a big difference
yes.
in our con experience.
I will also say, parents out there, you know that snacks are important. Snacks are, like, triply important at a con. After Andrew was gone on Sunday, each of the kids in turn had a meltdown when they started losing and a game was not going the way they wanted it to. Both times I pulled them aside, you know, talked to them a little bit, you know, why are you acting this way? You know, what would be a better way to act? You know, sit here and calm down for a while and have a snack. Oh, look, low blood sugar was part of the problem. So, yeah. So it's all about being sensitive to your kids' needs. Even though you want to go and play games, as a parent, you're trying to make sure your kids have a good time too, even if that means not playing games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for the amount of time that we spent running around the show floor, we were on the expo hall floor
pretty much
all
day,
like anytime things were open, and they got into it. They played yep. games. We encouraged them to ask questions. I cannot more highly recommend getting your kids interested in the things that you love. So when you go to these kinds yep. of conventions, it might not be a board game convention. It could be a video game convention. It could be a model train convention, whatever it is. You know, keeping them involved is it's a lot of fun, and it's hugely rewarding for you as a parent.
Yeah. And I will say, I think our kids have a feel like they have a much bigger ownership in the family gamers now, because we've shown them that, you know, it's not just about you play some games with us and then we go write a thing. Like, no, we really depend on your input.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of the family in the right. family gamers.
Right. And, you know, I think it's a stuff like this is a great way to reinforce if you act like a mature, you know, young adult, then you get the benefits of acting like a mature young adult.
Yeah.
And those are really, really helpful conversations and experiences to have. And now we can always look back on this and say, this is a thing that we did together.
Yeah.
And they'll be a little sad because our 3-year-old wasn't with us, but I think they know in their heart of hearts it was the right move.
Yeah.
And we relented and bought them a meeple pillow for $25. So that was probably
the highlight of the con.
Not
for us, but for them.
Yeah.
They enjoyed everything else, but getting to bring a meeple pillow home was the best part.
And we supported a friendly local game store.
We did.
So,
yes.
I mean, what the heck. Super long show, almost 2 hours, way longer than anything that we usually provide for our listeners. But I hope it was valuable. If there are games that we talked about that you want to hear more about, please let us know. You can tell us on Facebook. Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
You could tweet us.
@FamilyGamersAA.
You could leave a comment on our Instagram.
@FamilyGamersAA. All the games that we talked about that we have in for review, they're going to be on Instagram. So check out our Instagram page.
Yes.
You can always just flat out email us, Andrew@TheFamilyGamers.com.
Anitra@TheFamilyGamers.com. And don't forget to check out the website. The experience of PAX Unplugged has convinced us we probably need to be writing more regular blog posts.
Yeah, less formal reviews. Well, I mean, we're still going to do the formal reviews,
yeah.
but blog posts that are less formal.
Yes.
So definitely we're going to be doing a little bit more of that in the near future as well. You can be part of the community. The Facebook community is reachable at thefamilygamers.com/community. And go to your podcast subscriber of choice, and please subscribe to the show and leave a review. We very much appreciate it.
I think that's it for this very, very long show.
So until next week, play games with your kids.